Welcome, everybody, to Lore and Poor. I'm your host, Adam DeWeese, and I am joined by our very special guest, Cage. It's very hard to really pin down Cage. Cage is a Twitch affiliate, a variety streamer, DMs Go best-selling author, tabletop role-playing community builder, and cross-stitcher. Cage, welcome aboard. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. A long-time listener, first-time guest.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this because, as you all obviously know at home, Cage is the number one absolute authority on liches, knows everything about liches. If you've got a lich question, Cage is the first person you're going to go to. You're probably going to get ignored because Cage's DMs are just absolutely flooded.
Oh, they're with bonkers. Lich questions. Every single time I open up my phone, it's just like questions about liches.
Oh, what did liches eat? Yeah, it's nonstop. So, luckily for you all at home listening, you can now get a solid 30-ish plus minutes of Cage just spewing straight lich knowledge. But first, obviously, Cage, long-time listener, you know that we have to start every night off talking about what are we drinking tonight?
Yeah, so I am enjoying the exquisite... the delicious Boulevard Brewing Company Tank 7.
And I, guess what, everybody? I have not yet changed it up. I am still drinking Kettle One Vodka with a Diet Mountain Dew, as always. It's very... One of these times I'm going to change it up, though, and everybody's going to get so fucking confused.
We're going to have to, like, ask if you're okay.
I have started drinking Truly's, like the alcoholic seltzer waters, but I found out that I got to drink like six goddamn things in like an hour and a half to feel anything of those, and it just seems like it's so much effort. It's so much effort to do that, so I don't do that too often. So I've been sticking to my Kettle One and Diet Mountain Dew.
Okay, but what if you change the Mountain Dew flavor?
Like Code Red? Livewire? Yeah. Is that still a thing? Are either of those still a thing?
What if you did Baja Blast?
I have had Baja Blast exactly one time in my life, and I thought it was absolutely terrible. I hated it.
It's still my heart.
I did not enjoy it at all. Now... I do not remember if I drank it from Taco Bell or when they bottled it for a while, right? I don't think they still do. They did for a little bit. They were like, oh, now you can have like the Taco Bell Baja Blast.
To Taco Bell, you could even get the icy ones, like the frozen Baja Blast. And you could have like, it'd be like a Baja Blast margarita, but with Kettle One in it.
Yeah, it could be decent if I try to mask it with a shitty flavor.
Listen, if you put enough Kettle One in it, it doesn't matter what it tastes like after a while.
Before we get into the actual topic of liches, I do want to say anybody who knows me knows I absolutely cannot take shots or anything like that. I am kind of a baby when it comes to like alcohol taste and things like that. While I was upstairs before recording, while I was playing drunk Pokemon Snap and prepping by pre-gaming for this
episode. I hear his Butterfree pictures are divine.
They are absolutely terrible while I'm drinking. And I absolutely thought I had mixed my drink and took a big old gulp. I had not yet poured the Mountain Dew in. And took the biggest shot I've taken in probably 5 years and almost died. I was on the floor. I powered through because that's what professionals do. And now I'm just ready to talk about liches. And I'm well and toasty.
It sounds like you almost became good. A lich.
I think that might be the secret of becoming a lich is taking a shot of vodka when you're expecting a mixed drink. Speaking of liches, before we get into the Q&A section of this, Cage, would you mind kind of just walking our audience through, just from a high level, what even is a lich, maybe some history on liches, maybe even like some like notable liches out there, like the big ones, and just kick us off on this segment, please.
Yeah. So the basic idea of a lich is they're a creature who once were usually humanoids, but also could be other creatures. Like you can have Dracul liches and things like that. Mind flayers can also become liches. But usually they are some sort of spellcaster, sorcerers, wizards, things like that. Usually have to be intelligent beings because it's a difficult process to become a lich. Essentially what this creature needs to do is create what we call like a soul jar or something in order to put their life essence into. It's an expensive process. It's a process that takes somebody with a lot of intelligence. There's sometimes different spellcasting components or different types of like potion type things that come into play with this. It's a very precise science. This isn't like a let's just throw some things together and see if it works, because that will kill you. this isn't the process of Adam creating a dirty do, just throwing some stuff together into a glass and hoping it works.
That's good.
But yeah, so basically the way that they become a lich is they go through this expensive process. They create this soul jar, this life essence container. And as long as they keep this item intact, they basically can exist forever. And so oftentimes they are, many of them are evil creatures, but there can also be good liches as well. But yeah, in essence, it's basically a creature that doesn't want to end their existence. And so they go through a process in order to live through eternity if they can.
So right off the bat, you kind of touch on a couple times this process that liches go through to become a lich, right? You as the leading expert, do you know that process? Like, what do they have to do to become that lich?
Yeah, so this is like the best kept secret, right? So like if it were easy, nobody knows. Everybody would be doing it. You know what I'm saying?
I would do it, yeah.
So I don't know the full details. However, I know that there's usually the process of preserving the life essence, right? So that's a component of it. Usually it also comes with part of drinking some sort of like potion type thing that is concocted of various different ingredients, usually pretty hard to find ones, also usually ones that like sacrifices need to be made in order to obtain them. And then there's also usually like a spell or like an incantation in order for the soul jar, the soul, the life essence to be contained within that item.
So when somebody is, say somebody is, you know, getting older and they're like a smart wizard and they want to become a lich, but they don't know how does somebody go to find and seek out that process of exactly what they need to do to become the lich?
Yeah, so there are some old texts that contain that information. They're very difficult to find. If you're able to find another lich who's willing to give up the secret, generally not the case, but you could get lucky. It has happened. I think that sometimes it's multiple things that have to happen, right? So like not a single source will necessarily know the response to that. However, if a creature were to seek out like an old text, and then maybe they find some like bardic song that talks about a piece of it, there's pieces of this process that are ingrained into different types of storytelling techniques over time. And if somebody were able to research that long enough, so generally this process doesn't start when somebody's already think that they're about to kick the bucket. This is a process that takes some time and a lot of diligence, and it's something that people or the creatures will it's premeditated, right? Like it takes quite some time in order for this to happen, and it takes a lot of research.
Yeah, you gotta be proactive about it. You can't be like a human and 99 years old and be like, You know what's a good idea? I should be a lich. Yeah, you probably got to start that in like your 20s or 30s and start mm-hmm. that research yeah. and get things kicked off early. I'm just thinking of it in my head. Why would somebody want to be a lich? Like, what are the pros and cons to it? Because to me, all the pictures I've seen, liches look kind of gross.
Yeah, so for those of you that that are listening at home, if you want to imagine what a lich looks like, right? So, do y'all know like those like vacuum seal bags for traveling?
Yes.
So it's like basically you just attach one of those vacuums onto like
your the butt cheek
body, and you just suck all that air out, and that's basically what a lich looks like.
It really is.
Yeah, it really is. So it's just basically like a skeletal form with like no like real features. It's just that skeletal form.
So why would you want to do that?
Well, if you have business that you need to complete, sometimes if a creature is maybe at odds with somebody or at war and they want to outlast them, they may become a lich in order to outlast them. So here's the secret. It's actually quite a few liches are actually heckin' cowards. They would rather become a lich and just outlast their opponent than fight them head to head.
How old do these bad boys live to?
I mean, they can live into eternity. So the liches can't die from, like, old age or different spells and things that have anything to do with, like, a living person, so they can't be, like, put to sleep or cursed into, like, some sort of death sentence of some sort. Basically, the main way to get rid of a lich is to somehow destroy the vessel that holds their life essence. So if you can do that, it will then remove that their ability to live eternally, and then once they're killed at that point, they're immortal at that point, so then they can be killed.
So now I'm starting to see the appeal to being a lich, as you get to live forever, however long you want, and also get some pretty sick powers. So it's sounding like the soul drawer thing. I mean, it sounds like a horcrux. What came first, the horcrux or the soul drawer?
I think that they're sort of like two limbs from the same tree. So the difference between the soul jar and the horcrux is that the soul jar is something that like you pretty much can only do like one time. It's very difficult to do that process a second time. Whereas when we're thinking about horcruxes, there were several for an individual that many of us may be thinking of. and so it's not as difficult to separate that into multiple different things. But that also makes it more difficult, I think, to be able to protect all of those many different things. And so if you were to remove one of several Horcruxes, you know, your power is diminished by that much. Whereas, like, if you're only focusing on protecting one item, then you're probably more likely to live in stronger for longer, right? Because you can only really protect so many items at one time. So if you had, say, for instance, 10 Horcruxes, you're probably not going to be able to protect all of those. So if somebody were to take out 5 of them, you're only half as strong. Whereas if you only have 1 soul jar to protect, then, I mean, it's probably an easier task.
So you... I'm speaking to you, Cage, as if you are a lich. So a lich would...
How do you know I'm not?
You may have learned the arcane secrets and cracked her code. But either way, Cage, if you are or if you're not, legally, you have to tell me. if you were a lich, Cage, and you were to be creating your own, like, lair/dungeon, what do you think would be the best option? Would it be to make one, like, mega lair that you're also in to protect your physical body, and also has your soul drawer? Or would it be to create 2 lairs that are like, you know, 50-50 decent lairs, one to protect you and one to protect your soul drawer? What would be your technique?
So I would pick a third technique, in which I have even more than 2. I mean, if you ever played like Mario, like there's a lot of castles Mario goes through before he finds Peach.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, this is not the castle you're looking for.
So, I mean, you have to keep them guessing, right? So, and that also gives you maybe the option to, like, move the item around. So people are like, oh, we've already been in this lair. Like, clearly the soul jar isn't here. Well, joke's on you. I moved it last week.
you just cycle it through.
Yeah.
I think the best case scenario would be like somebody like completely clears out your dungeon, kills all of your undead servants or whatever you've got working with you, get to the end, they find like you put like 100 gold in a pouch as like a like kind of a faux, like, oh yeah, this is
right.
A treasure.
Okay, now imagine another adventuring party shows up at the entrance of this lair and they see all these dead skeletons, all the chests are empty. They're not gonna go to the end of that.
Exactly. You go back and you put your thing in the chest that had the gold.
And maybe reanimate
a couple
skeletons to make it interesting.
Yeah, I really like that. That's a good idea. I do. Now I'm starting to think that maybe perhaps you are actually a lich and this is your whole jam. We have talked about soul jars quite a bit in this first 15 minutes or so. What is a soul jar?
Yeah, so basically it can be any type of component that holds that life essence. I actually have heard of, there was one lich who had, actually, one of their grandparents used to make fruitcakes. People wouldn't really eat the fruitcake, right?
Nobody.
So they made, like, a lich extract, basically. And they baked it into one of their grandma's fruitcakes. And nobody would touch it. They lived for a very long time.
Oh, that's genius.
Isn't that great? Who would have thought?
Cage, if you had one shot and one shot only, and you had one soul jar, and you had to pick one item to transfer your soul into, and if anybody finds it and anybody destroys it for whatever reason, you die, you're not immortal, but if nobody finds it, you become immortal, what would you choose for your item to put your soul jar into?
Adam, I see what you're doing. And I cannot reveal to you the secret of what my soul jar is.
What's the second thing you would do? Not the real thing that you chose, but what would be your backup plan that you did not choose?
Let's see here. You know, I would probably have to pick something that nobody likes, right? So I'd probably put it at the bottom of a bottle of Kettle One.
Hey, I like Kettle One. I would find it. I'd be like, why is there a nail in my Kettle One? Because my thinking was, I was thinking like I'd put like a random nail or a screw, put my soul into the screw or the nail, and then just like chuck it in the woods. Like nobody's gonna, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a needle in a haystack, kind of.
Like a random rock, and then just throw it like.
They're into the bottom of the ocean. What's gonna happen? Although, over time, I'm sure that the water would probably erode the rock, but you probably would have lived a pretty decent life by the time that screw rusted or that stone ebbed away.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, that Harry Potter bad guy we keep referencing, he picked, like, really obvious things, right?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't he just be like, this rock right here, this pebble, I'm gonna make this a Horcrux and just fucking chuck it into this sea of rocks over here in Iceland. Like, why would you do that?
Are you trying to tell me, Adam, that you're a lich? You seem to have put a lot of thought into this.
Just don't go destroying all of the grains of sand in South Beach, Florida, or I will not be living very much longer.
You hear that, listeners? We're going to have to get an adventuring party together.
No, I'm a good lich, though. I'm a good lich, though, okay. So it's okay. Speaking of, are there good liches? I don't know.
Yes, there are, actually. And some that are... So there's some liches that like kind of fall neutral. For instance, there's one lich that I've heard about that actually was creating a jigsaw puzzle, and
they knew that they were, like, on the road to the end of their life, and they're like, I really need to finish this jigsaw puzzle. And they didn't have all the pieces put together yet, and it was a really difficult puzzle. So they actually became a lich in order to search for that missing puzzle piece in order to complete their puzzle. And then by the end of it, they were like, you know what? I'm good. And they actually destroyed their own soul jar after they finished the puzzle.
That is dedication. Because I tried doing a puzzle, and if it gets above 500 pieces, I'm fucking out. I'm out. Like, I'm not doing it. If it's 600 pieces, I'll start it and I'll get the corners. I may get the whole border. I'm fucking out after that. So for this one lich to be that dedicated.
Yeah, it was one of those puzzles where, like, the pieces weren't, like, they're, like, abnormally shaped, you know, with, like, the curves and stuff. Yeah, it was a difficult one. They finished it.
Are liches capable of love? I think you may have answered that in the puzzle. I mean, it sounds like that lich you just mentioned was in love with the puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, liches are able to experience a full range of emotions. They're very intelligent beings.
Do they have any sort of society, like, or do they, how do they get along with other liches or even people? Like, if a lich is walking down, like, Waterdeep, A, do they? And B, if they saw another lich walking down Waterdeep streets, would they be insecure about seeing this other lich? Would they be hostile towards the lich, or like how's the society of a lich work?
Yeah, so they're usually pretty solitary, so you'll never come across like a herd of liches or anything like that. They're pretty solitary beings. Oftentimes, they are very much interested in completing whatever task it was for the reason why they became a lich, right? So if it
like
was
making a puzzle,
or if it was like war or like revenge based, they may be coming up with strategies in order to complete whatever that task is. Some of them are so consumed in protecting their soul jars that is basically all they live for, well, quote unquote live for at this point. It's like almost like an endless loop of, I want to be immortal, and in order to be immortal I need to protect my soul jar, so therefore I'm protecting my soul jar, and that's basically all they end up doing then for eternity. So they're pretty solitary. You often don't find them out in public, but you may see some of them, particularly the good liches you may see out in public. There are some in, like, elven communities who are protectors of, like, history and lore.
Oh.
And, yeah, so you may see some out in public, but it's pretty unlikely. Obviously, just the visual is a little terrifying. People don't always take too keen to walking skeletons, basically. So if you do come across one in public, you probably wouldn't even know, because they're either heavily cloaked or disguising themselves, so that way they don't cause a stir.
One thing I keep hearing about liches is anytime you throw out the word lich, you always hear the saying, liches get stitches. I don't know what that means. Why do all these liches have stitches, Cage?
Like I mentioned, they're mostly, like, skeletal. They're, like, basically skin contracted to their skeletons, right? So they don't have, like, a lot of, like, that muscle and fat to protect, like, their bodies from falling apart. And so it's very easy for them to, like, lose, like, limbs or things like that. And so they oftentimes have to stitch their appendages back onto their form.
Now I get it. It's because they, like, will lose an arm. Gotta stitch that bad boy back up on there.
I mean, especially if they're walking down the streets of Waterdeep. Like, do you know how many stray dogs go after lich fingers?
Oh, I bet. They look like those tasty tree bones. Mm-hmm. Speaking of liches in Waterdeep, where do liches tend to, if they even do, vacation? Like if you're a lich and you're protecting your soul jar for eons and eons, and you want to just get a break, just like a week, a 10-day break from babysitting your soul jar, where do liches tend to, like, go to just really unwind?
So that depends on the lich, right? So, like, when we think about, so, like, say, the United States, right? people tend to vacation at places where other people live. And other people are like, well, this isn't a vacation spot. This is where I live. So then they go, right? So, like, it's the same thing for, like, liches, right? So some of them, like, if they live up in, like, a tower, they might be like, let's go to Waterdeep for vacation. You know, if there's some that live maybe, like, in the woods, they might be like, you know, a shoreline would be great. I mean, just a change in scenery.
So it's literally the same as, like, it's like asking, like, where would an American vacation? It's really, you can't answer that because it's all different. It depends on, like, where they're living, where they're...
Some of it depends on the history of them before they were liches. So sometimes they'll go back to, like, their childhood homes. They're very nostalgic, you know? Particularly in their earlier part of becoming a lich, because you know, they still have a lot of those same memories. Sometimes the people that they know are still alive. The longer that they're alive, the less people that they know, right? And so they're very nostalgic beings because, you know, they've just kind of like that turnover of people that they know.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, like, when they become a lich, do they carry over or bring with them any kind of emotions or memories, or, like, absolutely, are they the same person?
Yeah, they still remember everything that they knew in their living life, and actually the first, you know, decade or so of being a lich, especially if you're older, can be really difficult because you're, you know, seeing a lot of your friends are passing away, if you've ever you know, move far away from home for a period of time and then return back, and it's like, that didn't used to be a McDonald's, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they go back to the streets of Waterdeep, and they're like, when did that general store get here? Yeah, they have a lot of that same kind of emotion and nostalgia.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is a little sad.
It's kind of sad. Like, I kind of feel bad for these evil liches. Mostly evil. I know some of them can be good or neutral. This one, actually, Cage, came from your Discord.
Oh, no.
This is an audience question. It's an audience question. It's not too bad. Can liches get drunk? Because, as per canon, D&D canon, liches are immune to poison. So, like, if they ever wanted to go on a big party binger, you know, like, all the there's, like, you know, 36 liches that are going to get together and throw a big blowout bash. New Year's Eve. It's coming around the corner. I don't know how years work in Tyrell, in D&D land, but it is the new year, so they want to get together and get a bunch of alcohol. Can they get drunk?
Yeah, so they can, but usually it's not based on your living humanoid's alcohol, right? So these are very intelligent beings that have lived for a very long time, and they can create artifacts of unbelievable power. And so usually if a lich is going to get drunk, it's off of some sort of concoction that was created by liches, with the intent of getting intoxicated.
So it's a little bit different than, like, alcohol getting drunk. It is more like a kind of like a fabrication spell, something that they can, like, it's like a spell that they cast on something, like, it doesn't have to be liquid, right? Like, yeah, it could be like a fucking muffin, like a blueberry muffin. Yeah. They're like, cast a spell on it and they
it
eat
could
that.
Be fruitcake.
No, they wouldn't do that because that's like half of the liches, soul jars are fruitcake. We just talked about what they drink and maybe eat, fruitcakes. Do liches need to eat?
So they don't need to. But again, like I said, they're very nostalgic beings. So they will sometimes, like, enchant foods to taste like different things. So that way they can have those memories. Like, have you ever had like a taste memory where, like, you're, like, eating something and it kind of gives you, like, a flashback to, like, a time that was, like, you remember very fondly?
I got to tell you, I cannot remember it off the top of my head right now, but it was within the last 2 to 3 months I ate something and it destroyed me because I could not conjure up what exactly it was from my childhood I was remembering. But yes, I have had that.
So they will attempt to recreate those memories because of their nostalgicness. By, like, enchanting foods and things like that. So they don't need to eat. That's not a part of their survival. However, they can eat, and sometimes they will do it as like a form of, you know, pleasure and joy.
I keep hearing about this guy Asrak. He's been on two covers of, like, I think there's one, like, maybe what, 15 D&D 5e books, and he's on two of the covers. So who is this Asrak?
Yeah, so Sarak is he's one of the not so great ones. So basically his whole shtick is that he finds these artifacts that he knows adventuring parties will want to go for, right? And he will hide them. So you know how we talked about like having multiple layers that are just kind of like trapped, you know, and stuff like that? So he's got these all over the realm, and he's got them all trapped up, and he'll put artifacts that he knows adventuring parties will want to go for, and he'll put them at the end of those layers. And basically, he has scrying spells throughout the whole thing, so he just kicks back with his, you know, his container of popcorn, and he just watches the adventurers try and make their way through. It's like you've ever seen like Wipeout or like Ninja Warrior. Yeah. That's basically like
that's his entertainment.
Yeah, no, he just like sits back, puts his feet up, grabs some hot popcorn and a cold beverage, and he just scries on all of his different lairs and watches adventurers try to compete to like get to this artifact.
It's like a super deadly. It's like as if Wipeout had like fucking
time in his lairs. Oh, for sure. There's one that he has. Some people call it like the Tomb of Horrors. That's how bad it is.
I've heard about that one, and I was gonna ask. So it is literally like as if, like me at home was watching Wipeout, but instead of like big red comical balls hitting people and knocking them into the water, it's like darts. Like
it's legit spikes coming out of the wall and like rooms flooding and like
So he kind of wants people to come down.
And he lures them in, too. Like, I don't know if you've ever played, like, the game Boss Monster, but it's, like, all about, like, luring adventurers into your lair, too. He will sometimes put out, like, hey, I hear there's this artifact, you know, at the end of this lair. Y'all should probably go find it. And then he just, like, goes, like, okay, this is going to be great, and kicks back in his little home, and, yeah.
So he's literally, like, fishing with his soul jar.
Like, no, it's not necessarily his soul jar. It's just whatever artifacts he thinks will be interesting to adventurers in that century.
Oh, okay. I thought he was using like his soul jar as bait to get people into this Wipeout, deadly Wipeout
scenario. I think one time he did put his soul jar at the end, but the adventurers got a little too close, and then he removed it because he was like, maybe not.
He reconfigured his plans. He was like, okay, maybe we'll give this like enchanted dagger or something a prize. Okay, I know Asrak is Asrak, however you say his name. I know he's a pretty bad dude, but I respect the hustle to the grind for entertainment.
So I said that that usually they're solitary beings. If there's a particularly famous adventuring party that goes through one of Asarak's lairs, that's actually when sometimes those lich parties happen, is he's like, listen, friends, there's this adventuring party. A lot of people know about them. They're going to try out one of my lairs. Y'all should come over. We'll do a little potluck. Bring all of your favorite treats from when you were, you know, living. And, you know, we'll get together and it'll be great.
That sounds kind of fun. For that adventuring party that enters in, say they get to the end somehow and find the soul jar, I'm sure Asarak would pop in and try to defend it. What would be the, like, how do you fight one of these things? How do you fight a lich?
Yeah, so mundane weapons won't do anything to them, of course. Nothing. I mean, think about it. These liches have lived for centuries. They've been able to study every spell book under the sun, basically, right? So, so mundane weapons, not going to do a whole lot. You have to have a pretty powerful party in order to take them out. And then you have to keep in mind that, like, if you don't know the location of their soul jar are, after you take them out after a 10-day, they just pop back up where their soul jar is. Pop
right back up and come back and try again at you.
Yep. And now they know what you look like, so you better watch out. I mean, especially if it's like a Sarawak. He's been scrying on you throughout this whole thing. He knows what your name is. He probably knows what your biggest fears are. Like,
he knows you're not very good at wipeout. Yeah. I, in game, have tried to fight a lich before. Did not go my way. Lost a party member. We bailed.
That's probably the smartest move.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, say you have just a moment to give an adventuring party one piece of advice as they're approaching to fight a lich. As the leading expert on liches, what would be your advice? Like, what would be their Achilles heel? What would you tell them that would get them over the battle and actually, like, over the hump and be able to defeat this lich?
Yeah, so it's going to be dependent on the situation the adventuring party is in. If they know the location of the soul jar, destroy it, because it'll make the lich mortal, right? So that would be the number... That would be your best case scenario, is if you already have access to the soul jar and you have a way to destroy it, do that. If you don't know where the soul jar is, or you don't have an ability to destroy it, I mean, other than running, I guess put up your best fight. It's always worth a try. But yeah, I mean, magical weapons and spells are going to be some of your best bets, but just know that that lich is going to... So think about, like, how much dedication it takes to, first of all, become a lich, and then to continue chase after that, like, goal that you have. They're not just going to be like, oh, I'm so sorry, I surrender, right? Like, they have dedicated not just their life, but also their, like, their unending existence to whatever this goal is. So they're not just going to surrender to an adventuring party that's like, listen, put down your sword, because we've got you. Like, you don't got them. So, yeah, just try your best, I guess. Magic is your best bet against them. And try not to fight them in their lair.
Oh, yeah, because then they've got a whole new slew of things they can do. Yeah. So don't fight them in their lair. Try your best. Use magical items. And then destroy that soul jar. Those are the kind of the tips we've got to take away from this interview. And other than that, Cage, when you're not studying up on liches and getting flooded with DMs about lich questions, where can people find you at?
Yeah, so everything about me is on my website, ragecagerugger.com. That's ragecagerugger.com. My Twitch is, believe it or not, Rage Cage Rugger was taken both on Twitch and Twitter. So my
what?
And they, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so my Twitch is RageXCageXRugger, and my Twitter is RageCageXRugger. Some of the stuff that I've got, the adventure that is probably my most popular adventure is the Brewski Jubilee, which is a D&D 5e adventure on the DM's Guild, where your players go through a drunken obstacle course during their downtime. But also, I just released Fantastic Taverns, which is a tavern supplement with Carolyn Kunza. And I am also one of the writers on the current Kickstarter Sirens Battle of the Bards through Apotheosis Studios.
So yeah, go check all that out. Very excited to see the Sirens Bards Kickstarter come out. Obviously, that is very massive right now. That is exploding. Cage, thank you so much for joining us. I'm trying to think if there's anything I need to mention right now. I don't think there is. I think thank you all so much for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks. I do think this is probably going to be after a missed week, because I did poor planning with the Extra Life 24-hour charity event and everything. This episode right now, Cage, is supposed to come out in 2 days, which I don't think will be edited in 2 days. So I think instead we're going to miss that 2 day episode and be 2 weeks later. So thank you all for your patience, I guess. Sorry that I missed 2 weeks ago, but I think this one was worth the wait. I had a lot of fun with this one, Cage. And remember, everybody, at least half of what you heard tonight was probably true.
Later, liches.
Oh, that's a good one. Bye, Reddy. A Majestic Goose Podcast. Honk. Honk.